hang in there. It is. Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. We have an incredible guest today. We have the Charles Barkley joining. I feel like I need to do like a starting lineup intro from Leeds, Alabama. We have Charles Barkley joining the program. Charles, a couple Birmingham guys. How about this?
Yeah, man, we're doing pretty good for a couple of homeboys from Alabama. I don't talk about Birmingham, man. I'm from Leeds. I got to give Leeds that flowers. You know that I used to get to Oregon back in the day when I was at Auburn. They used to try to say I was from Birmingham. I said, "Yo, man, I'm gonna say this for the last time. I'm from Leeds." My man Jim Fife from back in the day. He says, "I understand." So, man, but you know what? You know, it's been incredible, Smiley, to be honest with you. I think about growing up in Leeds and how the best decision I ever made was going to Auburn because I got an opportunity to play right away. Mm-hmm. That was probably the best decision I ever made, you know, because it was going to be UAB, Alabama, or Auburn. And all three of them are great schools, but man, going to Auburn was the best decision from a basketball standpoint and sure. Number one from a life standpoint. Because once you go to Auburn, you're part of a family for life. But sure. It was such a cool thing to get to play right away. You know, it's so funny. You got all this going on today with the transfer portal.
Uh-huh.
Didn't you know who was there before you went there? I said, you just wasted. I said, because it's the number one thing I tell kids. I said, that's going to be the number one, the first time you're away from home, okay? And if you don't get to play the sport that you've been a stud in your whole life, college is going to suck. And you go there, and you're like, oh, the guy in front of me is, like, really, really good.
That's how it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah. When I went to UAB, because it's closest.
Sure.
Then I went to Tuscaloosa. Auburn was the furthest away, but when I was there, I was like, okay, I'm not betting that guy. Oh, yeah, I'm betting all these guys. But I tell guys, I say, yo, man, I don't want to hear the education aspect. Because if you want an education, you can get it. All of them are great schools. Any college is a great school if you want to put your mind to it. But I say, as a player, that's the first time you're going to be away from home. And if you don't get to play, college is going to suck. But it's going to screw up your grades anyway. Because if you're a stud in high school and you go to college and you're a long way from home and not getting to play, it's going to affect your grades.
It's crazy how much just college athletics, NIL, it's all changed. And Auburn University, it's crazy to me how really the Auburn basketball program, what it's done under Bruce Pearl too. I know this, we didn't come on to talk about Auburn basketball, but
Yes, we did.
I'm surrounded by Auburn people in my house. My daughter's a diehard Auburn fan. My wife obviously cheered at Auburn. So I'm surrounded by it here, man, from an LSU Tiger.
Well, you married up, first and foremost.
That's fair. I'll kick my coverage.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. As much as I love Auburn, I never thought Auburn would go to the Final Four. I thought we'd have some, because we'd never been. And now we've been two times in like 5 years. I got nothing but love and respect for Bruce Pearl. I admire him. I respect him. He cares about his kids. But, man, what he has done for the Auburn basketball program has just been incredible. I mean, mm-hmm. And I get lucky because, you know, I had never been to March Madness before until I saw it working the tournament. And I'll say this, I was blessed to go to the Olympics twice. The Olympics are the best thing I've ever been to in my life. And I tell you, if you really say you're a sports fan, there's two things you got to do in your life. You got to go to the Olympics as a fan, and you got to go to the Final Four. I tell people, they're the two most amazing things. And then about, I think it was 5 years ago, somewhere in there, Auburn's at the Final Four. I never thought in my wildest dream we'd be at the Final Four. And then last year, we go back again, and I didn't think we could beat Florida. I thought Florida was the best team. I mean, all the Auburn people got mad at me. I said, well, I got y'all going to the Final Four. I just don't think anybody can beat Florida. I said, it's not my job to get on TV and just pick the homer teams. I said, we got Kenny for that. Kenny picks North Carolina every year, and he's never been right. So, but you know, man, Bruce Pearl, him and his staff, Steve, his son, and the guys, Marquise. I just got a lot of love. Ira, I just got a lot of love and respect for those guys. And, you know, it's so screwed up the way it is now, Smiley. You're going to have a different team every year. And, you know, kids are just going to the highest bidder now. So you don't know what players you're going to have until the season starts. You know, I played golf with Coach Saban recently, and that guy, I admire and respect the hell out of him, but he's the greatest college football coach ever. And, you know, just talk about ways to fix the sport. I don't know what you're going to do, because I don't know how you're going to be able to put the toothpaste back in the tube. Mm-hmm. And you know, I said, he was picking my brain, and because I want to fix it, because my thing is, we have screwed up college sports for like 1% of the players who probably should be getting paid.
Yeah, but the
other 99% are getting a free education, which is the most important aspect from where I look at it, because most of these kids are black kids, and I want them to get that free education because it's a big deal. But because some guys were not getting paid, and I'm not opposed to players getting paid, but not the numbers they're getting paid, because that's an unsustainable business model. To come up with $10, $20, $30 million every year. And basketball, the thing that sucks about basketball, Smiley, if I'm going to pay, I have to pay a kid millions of dollars to be at Auburn for 6 months. I'm not getting any return on my investment. That makes zero sense. At least in football, you get a great player. You can pay him for 3 years. He's there. but to pay a basketball player millions of dollars to be at Auburn for 6 months, and we like Cooper Flagg is amazing. Like he got Duke to the Final Four, which is incredible. But like they didn't. If you're gonna pay guys millions and millions of dollars, you got to at least get a championship out of it. And he totally.
You can't guarantee it.
You can't guarantee it. And he is phenomenal. I cannot wait to see Cooper Flagg in the NBA. And they had a bunch of NBA players. I think, forget the kid from, he went to Charlotte. Can't think of his name. He had the kid who went to the Sun. They had three NBA players. And they didn't even win the whole thing. So I just don't understand how we're going to fix this thing. It's going to be very interesting in the next few years.
Well, even too, the last thing I'll kind of touch on with this college and NBA stuff too is that you have a player like Chad Baker Mazzara, who's one of the best players at Auburn over the last couple of years. He obviously was up for a renegotiation process, ends up taking more money or allegedly takes more money and goes to USC. Reminder that he's a player that's 25 years old, the same age as Zion Williamson, who's just finishing up his fifth year in the NBA. So all of a sudden you have these super, super, super seniors that are taking advantage of the system by making more money in college. Because is Chad Baker Mazzara going to be a good pro? Maybe. Doubtful? I don't know. But there's plenty of really, really good college players that aren't going to be pros that are just maximizing the amount of money that they can make in their career, which would you blame them? Probably not.
Well, I blame the NCAA for that. Listen, man, we got some guys that had COVID for like 5 years now. Listen, I think there should be a max you can be in college, probably 5 years. You can't stay in college forever. Even if you're making money, yeah. I don't think it's fair. You can't have 25-year-olds playing against 17, 18-year-olds. I don't think that's healthy. I mean, the COVID thing is over, first and foremost. But there's two problems to this whole thing. Think about this, Molly. Of every sports league in the world, in the entire world, think about that. Overseas, wherever. College sports is the only league in the world that don't have a salary cap. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Think about that.
Yeah.
Every single sports league in the world has a salary cap, except the NBA, the NIL. That's the first problem. And secondly, if people get to renegotiate, I want to renegotiate every year. I would love.
Me too.
Hey, listen. Every person listening to this podcast in the world, I say, can I go to my boss every year and say another company offer me more money? That doesn't make sense. Whatever. That makes zero sense. So, and then I know the first thing people say, well, we got to have a salary cap. I said, well, that sounds good. But if I'm the big schools, I don't want a salary cap.
No, you want your advantage.
Why do I want a level playing field? So everybody's not in the same situation. So, man, I want to fix it so bad. And everybody said, we want to fix it. I says, I want to fix it too. But it's not that simple. Because like I say, they said that Ohio State spent $20 million on transfers last year. And they won the championship. So why would they want a salary cap? But somebody else going to pay that much money this year and next year and the year after. And the thing is, the number's only going to go up. But it's just an unsustainable business model. But also, if we keep, number one, they're going to start cutting from other sports, especially the women's sports.
Yeah.
And also, and golf. Yeah, and some of these smaller schools, they're just going to be like a minor league system. You know?
Yeah, it's messed up.
Yeah, so... I want to fix it, but I just don't know how it's going to be done. It's not that simple.
It's definitely going to be tough to figure out. Maybe you and Coach Saban continue to play some more golf and y'all can figure it out on the links, because it's going to be one that's tricky. And then you have other players too. You talk about the renegotiation process. What about the players that you want return on investment from that turns out they suck? You know, those are the players you're like, oh God, I can't believe we spent $1 million on this guy and he can't throw a forward pass. You know, that's the other side of the coin.
Well, you know, when I start getting ready, the way I do my schedule is I really don't, unless I'm just sitting around, I don't watch a lot of college basketball like the first couple of months. So it's like October, November, December, I get ready for that's the NBA. I say, okay, I'm going to watch the only NBA right now because I got to concentrate. But I've seen each team play probably 5 or 6 times. You know who's good, who's bad. You know what it's going to come down to. But starting January the 1st, I watch about 3 or 4 college games a day. We get a report every week on every conference. But when I'm reading some of the stuff, to pick it back on your point, some of these young kids are getting harassed because they took so much money to go to a certain school. And, like, you don't know. Like, if somebody offers you no more money, you have to factor in, wow, there's a big difference between the South, Midland South, and the SEC, the Sun Belt, the ACC. Yeah. So when you pay these players to move up to high-level competition and they're not as good, because I tell you, you know, it was so funny. I live in Scottsdale, obviously. And so I'm sitting around one night smoking cigars and drinking with my guys. And I'm laughing. They're like, man, Luke Longley, he's not a great player or a really, really good player. I said, he's a good player. They're like, well, he's not playing that great for the Suns. I says, you know, I don't even have to look at the numbers. But number one, he was playing with Michael Jordan. Okay, so his numbers are different. But I'll bet you he's averaging close to the same. He says, what do you mean? I says, yeah, those X amount of points and rebounds he's averaging with Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan's out there. It ain't the same as playing with some guy named Larry over here in Phoenix. So I said, you can't just go by the numbers. And I think that's what happened to a lot of college players when they take the money to move to a better conference. And they're like, ooh, there's a big difference in this conference. But guys don't even think about that. Like, you know this. College golf, well, first of all, high school golf, I had to learn this. High school shape ain't college shape. Like, you probably had to learn I'm really good in high school. When I go to college, I'm playing against better players. When I go to PGA Tour or I go to the Corn Ferry Tour, I'm playing against good players. And I go to PGA Tour and get playing against better players. So guys don't even understand that. They're like, I'm a good player. Yeah, you are a good player, but there are levels to this. And you have to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. You definitely do. And I want to get your just career when it comes to TV, Charles, because you've been long respected as one of the best analysts in the game, and you really do it your own unique way. And when you got into the TV business, Charles, was it easy for you to quickly just be yourself, or did somebody want you to try to be somebody you weren't in those first couple years?
No, you know, it's interesting. I think the one thing that sucks about my job is when I have to criticize players, because I'm always a player at heart. But that goes with the job. And you know, you find that out right now.
Totally.
But the guy who hired, well, not hired me, who talked to me about television is a guy named Dick Ebersol. He says, "Hey, what do you think about TV? You retire. You only got a couple years left." I says, "Yeah, I don't know what I'm gonna do when I retire." He says, I think you would be great on television because I see how you handle the press. You're just a straight shooter." He says, "I think you'll be great on television." He says, "You're always going to be in trouble, but you're going to be great." And I said, "What the hell does that mean?" He said, "Charles, when people tell you they want honesty, they really don't want honesty. They want you to repeat if they agree with you." I said, "What?" He says, "Yeah, you know." He said, "People say they want honesty, but they don't." He said, "And fans definitely don't want honesty. Fans want two things, Smiley. Tell me my favorite player is great. Tell me my team is a contender." Yep. "And if you don't say those things, they hate you." But he says, "Hey, man, just be a straight shooter." And even people who don't like me or disagree with me, at least they say, "Hey, you know what? I don't like you or I don't agree with you, but I know you're not just saying stuff to get clicks." And I truly mean that because I think television is so powerful. People believe what you say, so you have to be honest. And we got a bunch of guys in our business who are full of who just do clickbait, trying to get follows and things like that. And it really drives me crazy because I would never want to disappoint the public where I just did something for money. I would never do that because I think it's just too powerful being on television. Because I always say this, there's somebody in Maine, North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, they might be watching me. And what I say about a player, they're going to believe it most of the time. And I would never want to say something just because I was trying to get people to watch my TV show, watch my radio show, or come at me online. So I take it very serious. Like I say, that does not mean I'm right or perfect all the time. But I want to try to be as honest as possible.
So the other question I have for you, Chuck, here is that the chemistry that you guys have on Inside the NBA, which, by the way, congrats on an incredible run to over 25 years on TNT, moving to ESPN for this season. But you can't fake the chemistry. And I'm curious from your standpoint, when did you feel like at you four as a unit that you started to say, like, "Man, this could really be something special"? Was it day one or was it a year or two in? You know, when did you that light bulb kind of go off for you?
It takes a while because you have to understand. So it was when I started, it was just me. It was Kenny and Ernie. So it took me a while to figure out my thing. And I think we probably did 15 years, maybe 17 years. Maybe not that long, 12 or 13 years together. Then Shaq came in. Then there's another adjustment. So there's always an adjustment period.
Right.
But so there's two things that are important. Only two things that are important. The games are the first and foremost important thing. The second thing is make sure people are having fun watching. Because I don't think people understand. We were on from 7 o'clock to 2 in the morning. That's a long freaking time. and nobody want to watch basketball that long. Nobody want to watch basketball from 7 to 2 in the morning. Like, I love basketball, but I don't want to watch basketball from 7 to 2 in the morning. So I try to say, if there's a dude there with his wife or a dude there with his girlfriend, hopefully a dude there with his son at some point, or even his daughter who likes basketball, I want to make sure the woman, the girlfriend, and the kids. Because, you know, most dads, like my grandson says to me, "My big papa is weird. He just watches golf, football, and basketball. Because that's all I'm going to watch." My grandson says that to me. My daughter sends me a video one day. He says, "You're going to go spend a day with Big Pop." And he says, "Wow." And my daughter says, she's taping the whole thing. He says, "He's weird." And he said, "Why do you say that?" We have to watch golf, basketball, and football. That's all we watch. And I was like, "That's true." And so to get
that's
back.
That's me too.
That's it. The thing is, so I'm hoping that somebody's sitting home with one of their people like, "Hey, let's just have fun." But there's always adjustment period when you bring somebody new into the mix. Me and Ernie and Kenny went through it. Mm-hmm. And then when we brought on Shaq, the only problem with Shaq was, Smiley, the first show, Shaq does something crazy. The second show, Shaq does something crazy. The third show, Shaq does something crazy. We're only 3 weeks into the season. It's still October. We have to have a team meetings like, yo, man, what are you doing? He's like, I want to entertain people. I know we want to entertain people, but we're just on show three. We got seven more months to go. He's like, what do you mean? We can't keep doing crazy stuff every night. The joke smiley became... So we had a meeting like, yo, man, you got to calm down. It's like we're still in October. We don't finish until June. So what the joke became, our producer said, how many shows do you think we get? We're probably about six shows before he sets himself on fire. And that became like the joke. Like, yeah, how many shows before he sets himself on fire? And we started laughing. We told him, like, at the rate you're going, we're about six shows before you set yourself on fire. And we're like, yo, man, we're not trying to keep escalating. It's impossible to go crazy for all these months. And but the thing is, we hope. I said, we hope that the game, like, go back to my original point, we hope the games are great. Because let me tell you something. There's nothing right here. There's nothing here than two bad basketball games from 7 to 2 in the morning. There's nothing worse. Like,
because you got to find something to talk about.
Oh, my. Smiley, that, you know, I said we go from 7 to 2 in the morning. When you have two bad games, it's like we've been on for like 12 hours straight. And we're like, what can we do to make people stay watching? That's really the only time we're like, we get together, like, what can we do to something stupid and fun? What can we do stupid and fun? Because, like I say, when you own that long and you have two bad games, it is the longest night ever.
Right, because you'd rather just be an analyst. You just want to break down, like, it's what you love to do. You love to talk basketball.
There's nothing better when there's
stuff that you'd rather talk about.
There's nothing better when it's two good games. I mean, there's absolutely nothing better when there's two good games. But there's nothing ever worse when it's damn two bad games.
Is it going to be weird, though, when you go back and watch your show or see highlights from your show and you see ESPN, you know, on the bottom ticker? Is that going to be something that's going to be different for you? Because, you know, you had to have a lot of pride with your show being on TNT for so many years. And I'm sure that there was times where you'd look at the opponents, you know, their post-game shows over at ESPN and thinking, man, they can't hold a candle to what we can do. And now all of a sudden you got ESPN on your bottom ticket of your show.
Yeah, there is some trepidation and nervousness for several reasons. Number one, it's going to be totally new. But and there's been a really lack of communications from everybody, because I don't think nobody know what's going to happen, to be honest. So the best part of our show is like that 45 minutes to an hour, we get to go crazy after the game. That's the best part of our show. Our question, which we haven't got an answer for, is do we have to go right to SportsCenter? Or when we on ABC, do we go right to local? Those are two important questions that we're actually getting together in about 2 weeks and going to finally sit down with ESPN face-to-face and says, hey, can y'all tell us how this thing is going to work? Because I've talked to some of their people. They're like, you know, sometimes we get like 3 minutes. They're like, we got to go local. We got to go to the local affiliate. So that's it. You got 2 to 3 minutes. I'm like, we could even discuss what happened in the game in 2 to 3 minutes. We're stuck. Or they're like, you got 7 minutes or 10 minutes, then you got to go to SportsCenter. To me, that would really hurt our show. Because you can't really tell what happened in a game in 2 or 3 minutes. Mm-mm. Like, I like to explain the like what happened, but good coaching. I think the coach made a mistake. The player made a mistake here. And so it's all going to be new. But to answer your question, yeah, it's going to be weird. But the weirdest thing is like, yo, man, do we have to go right to local news right now? Or do we have to go right to SportsCenter? How much time do we have after the game to actually talk basketball? Because mm-hmm. that's when we had some of our best communications. But we don't know. Well, like I said, we're going to get together. I think it's the 24th. They sent us out a mass email. Say, hey, can you guys be in Atlanta? ESPN is going to come down and want to explain everything. I'm so sure. Let's do it.
did you consider retiring through all this? You did.
Well, I did for a couple of reasons. The reason I didn't retire, we got to keep everybody hired. You know, the last year really sucked for me, Smiley, to be honest with you, because, you know, I've always lived in a fantasy world where I've been around rich jocks and my friends. But to be around people who talk about their mortgage, having their kids have to switch schools, it was really painful because, you know, I've known these people for 25 years and we never thought we were going to lose the NBA. But to be around my friends and having them say, yo, I got to find a job because I got to worry about my mortgage. I'm about to send my kids to a different school. That was really painful for me and Ernie, Kenny, and Shaq because we would have been fine. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I had decided to, okay, I don't know if I want to do this. And me and Ernie are always stepping together. And then when this opportunity came up, because I met with NBC and Amazon, and even if I went to one of those networks, I would have a whole new team more than likely. So I was concerned about that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, this thing with ESPN came up, and I was like, wait a minute, we can keep 200 people jobs who I really like and admire. Let's do it. And Ernie and Kenny and Shaq were like, yeah. Because all three of us probably would have, well, all four of us would have got hired. Ernie would have, mm-hmm. I don't know if Ernie would have went to another network. I can't answer for him. But we all had, I definitely had opportunities. But to keep the people at Turner employed, that to me was the selling point. So yes, I was retirement was first on my list. But like I say, if I go to Amazon or NBC, I got a whole new crew.
Sure.
And I didn't know how that was going to work. But as long as I got everybody to stay employed, man, I was happy with that.
And it's, of course, it's a business from the NBA's perspective with all the different networks that want a piece of the NBA rights. But still, are you a little bit upset with the NBA and maybe not finding a way to keep NBA on TNT?
100%. They just went for the money. They just went for the money. And listen, I understand. We're in the money-making business. I was disappointed. They just took the money. But I think one of the things they underestimated, and they're going to have to think about, how are these fans, which I know they don't give a about the fans. They just, as long as the owners and the players are making money, they don't care about the fans. They got to find a way where these fans can find these games. You know, because I know certain nights they're going to be on NBC. Certain nights they're going to be on Peacock. They're going to be on ESPN a couple nights. They're going to be on Amazon a couple nights. You should never disrespect your fans. And I think it's going to be interesting how fans are going to find the games. Because, you know, they've been on the same nights for 40 years. Starting next year, I think ESPN still got Wednesday and Friday. But the other one's going to be on NBC and Amazon, and I'm not sure what nights. So you're going to have to be a diehard fan
to find the games.
To find the games. And then I know NBC is going to split them with Peacock, mm-hmm. which is another thing. So I think we have disrespected the fans, but I understand Adam Silver, who I admire and respect, he has to take the most money because the players don't give a and the owners don't give a want the most money possible.
Yeah, and I can understand that too. And I told you we were going to talk a little bit golf, so let's do a soft transition over to the golf and keep your analyst hat on, because you've been a part of many renditions of the match on TNT. And I think there's been 8 to 9 at this point. You played in one and been on the broadcast for most other ones. So I have to ask, a lot of people want you to be calling a lot of golf. They love your honesty, and sometimes we don't quite get that full of honesty in the game of golf. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how your experiences have been sitting next to Ernie, sitting next to a legend in Trevor Immelman from a player and a broadcast standpoint, and some of your favorite memories from those matches.
You know, Smiley, I have the same philosophy when I do basketball. Hey, man, make sure the fans are having fun. You know, Ernie makes fun of me. I said the same thing before every show, like when they count down like 10, I said about 5, I said, remember guys, it's just basketball. We're not saving the girl. I said the same thing before every show. And when I do the golf match, I said, guys, it's just off. We're not saving the world. And I truly mean that sincerely. I actually always try to make sure people at home are having a good time, because I'm pretty sure all the NBA players are rich. I'm pretty sure all the golfers are rich as they're in the match. I don't think they care who wins. They're probably getting a ton of money from their charity and a ton of money from appearing. So I want to make sure that the fan is having a good time. And I really mean it. I love golf. Golf is, to me, first of all, it's one of the few places you can get peace and quiet. Let's first get that out the way. I tell people, they're like, why do you play so much golf? I say, yeah, when I go shopping, people ask me why I'm at the supermarket. Well, I just came here to talk to you. I was saying to myself, I had nothing to do today. I just want to come here. Like when I go to the dry cleaner, like, what are you doing here? I said, you know what? I just came to the dry cleaner because I know for a fact that I said, I know people want to talk to me at the dry cleaner. So for me, golf is, man, it's like therapy. I love to go out there with 3 of my friends, slap the ball around. I love the walk. You know, I live in Philadelphia during the summer. Like, living in Arizona, you have to drive all the time. I play golf every day for the last 3 months, basically. I love walking. I love being in the middle of all those big old trees. You play with 3 of your friends, and, man, you just have a blast. There's a lot of trash talking. There's a lot of trash talking.
It sure is. We see LeBron now starting to play a little bit of golf, too. He was the one NBA guy that's, you know, we've had Steph and all these players over the years, Michael Jordan, into the game of golf. And now LeBron's got the bug.
Let me tell you something. I don't know what took LeBron so much. I'll say this, Smiley. Golf, to me, is interesting. Golf is probably the most addictive thing I've ever done in my life. Like, I got tired of playing basketball. I needed a mental break when the season was over. Like, because it's a lot. It's a lot. You get tired of training. But, man, I never get tired of playing golf. I love it. I mean, every course is different. Every day is different. And some days you're like, oh, I got this. I got it. Then you go out there and shoot a 95 the next day. I'm like, damn, how the hell I shoot an 80? I shot an 80 yesterday. And then I'm like, I shot 92 today. But it's just so awesome. Like, I just got back. Me and the boys, we had a boys' trip to Whistling Straits this weekend.
How was it?
Oh, it was amazing. We played the Irish one day and Straits one day. Then we played Black Wolf Run a couple days. We do it. We go twice a year. We go at the beginning of the summer and go at the end of the summer. One of my friends, Jason's a member up there. And, man, we had 4 days of just unbelievable golf, great food, a lot of drinking, a lot of drinking.
Charles, you know
what's weird about Wisconsin? Why is that the only place you eat brats?
I don't know. I mean, Germany's the only other place where if I'm going to eat brats,
excited at the turn every day to get a brats. And a brats is unbelievable, but you never eat brats. I never get brats in Alabama or Arizona. But
it's Connecticut sausage here.
Yeah. That's some good sausage. They had me and Bruce Pearl have a golf tournament every year at Auburn to raise money for the program. And that Connecticut sausage is on one hole. That's the slowest hole ever, because everybody's sitting there chomping for like 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, that Kinect is unbelievable. Throw a little pimento cheese and a little pickle on it, a little cracker. It's the best little game day snack. And I was about to ask you this, Charles. So you're talking Whistling Straits and golf trips, and I'm sure you've played a lot of places. And is there any golf course that's currently on the top of your bucket list that you're trying to play right now? What's at the top? Where do you want to play?
Well, my favorite golf course is probably Saucon Valley. It's about an hour outside of Philly. They got three golf courses. They played the men's senior open and the women's open probably twice in the last 6 or 7 years there. They got three courses. My favorite is probably Way Hill, but the old course and the gray course, are fantastic. I'll tell you this, and he's probably going to get pissed, but I don't care. He can't beat me. Peyton Manning is a great dude. He calls me a few months back. He says, "Hey, you want to go play Augusta?" I'm like, "Yeah, let's go." And he's like, "I haven't told you the dates yet." I says, "I don't give a shit. Whatever I got planned, I'm going to Augusta." So he invites me and Grant Hill and Dwayne Wade, and we play. This is like 2 weeks before the Masters. Two of the best days of my life.
Wow.
Two of the best days of my life, Smiley. Because I played one other time, but it was kind of like late. And it wasn't in perfect shape. It was still good, but it wasn't in perfect shape. But this was 2 weeks before the Masters. Man, that was one of the great experiences of my life. We stayed on the property. So shout out to the great Peyton Manning. And if you do it again, count me in, Peyton. But he took me and Dwayne Wade and Grant Hill, and we're like, yo, if we die tomorrow, it'd be a good way to go. Playing Augusta for 2 days, we stayed on the property. It was incredible, man. It was incredible. I played Pebble Beach. I don't like Pebble Beach, to be honest with you, because I hate taking three layers of clothing. it's amazing. It's beautiful. But, like, when you start out in the morning, it's cold. Then you have to take off all your layers. Then you have to put them back on. I hate all that. I mean, it's beautiful scenery, but I'm a warm weather golfer, man. I'm a puss deep down. I do not want cold, wind, or rain.
You sweat a bunch too. I've had you on our desk in Reno, Tahoe for the American Century Classic. I don't know who sweats more between you and Tiger Woods.
Well, Tiger sweat because he's in shape. I sweat because I'm out of shape. Those are two different. Like, he's probably, you know, he's in great shape and he drinks a lot of water. So that's, it's just coming out. I sweat because I'm fat. So there's a huge difference. His is hydration sweat. Mine is fat sweat. Those are two different things.
Hey, I'm proud of both. I'm proud of both, Charles.
Yes, yes.
Oh, gosh, man, that's too good. Who's the best player you've ever played with?
Tiger is the best player. I played with Tiger probably 15 to 20 times. He's the best.
What about the best round? Did he have the best round you've ever witnessed?
He always played great. It was amazing. Like it was the most talented golfer I ever played with is Phil Mickelson. There's nobody ever played golf had more talent than Phil Mickelson. Tiger is the hardest working golfer I've ever seen. Like, I would call him sometime in the morning, and he was hitting balls. I said, "I'll call you back later." And I called him back like 5 hours later. He was still hitting balls. I was like, damn. You're supposed to hit balls for like an hour or two. That's it, max. But Tiger's the greatest golfer I've ever seen. But the most talented golfer I've ever been around is Phil. There's nobody had more talent than Phil. Mm. He was incredible. I met Phil because Amy, his wife, danced for the Suns when I played. And I tell you a funny story. I just got traded to Phoenix, and I didn't know Amy at the time. And Amy says, "Hey," I get to know her and just hanging out. She said, "Would you play golf with my boyfriend one day?" I'm like, sure. Just thinking, like, blowing it off, just trying to deflect. I didn't know it was Phil Mickelson. So this goes on for, like, 3 to 4 months. And every time I said, "I'm going to get around to playing golf with your boyfriend." And finally, about 4 months in, and she says, "Oh, my boyfriend's playing this week on tour." I'm like, "Tour? I thought he said he was in college." "Yeah, he gets some exemptions." I said, "What's your boyfriend's I said, what's your boyfriend's name? She says, Phil Mickelson. I'm like, what?
You've been... Let's go tomorrow. What time are we playing tomorrow?
She told me that 3 months ago. And I said, oh, we're playing next week. And I said, Amy, start the conversation with my boyfriend, Phil Mickelson. Don't just start the conversation with Joe. I don't want to play with some random dude. But start the conversation with my boyfriend, Phil Mickelson, want to play golf with you. Every time I saw Phil, I was like, yo, man, tell Amy to start the conversation with my boyfriend, Phil Mickelson, want to play golf with you. I thought you was some random dude. I didn't want to play golf with some random dude.
Man, oh man. Hey, did when you left these rounds, I know you're a player that has had, you know, there are ups and downs in the game of golf. We've all seen the videos of where you've got the little hitch in your golf swing. Somebody like Phil Mickelson, a very, very smart individual, can help a lot of players that he watches and plays with. Did Phil ever give you tips when you played with him during those years and your work with Stan Utley? Kind of want to get into that, Charles, and just kind of what made you get through your hurdles in the game of golf?
You know, be honest with you, nothing got me through it. I had pretty much quit, Smiley. I only played in charity events because it was no fun playing. I'm not going to get on here and lie. Even though I get to smoke a couple of cigars. As long as I smoke a couple of cigars, I'm good. But it was not a lot of fun for probably 20 years. I had to yip, basically. It sucked. I got down to playing with Tahoe, and I played with a couple of charity events, and that was it. For friends. I'd embarrass myself for friends. And so I was at Tom Lehman's tournament, and Stan, who's the best dude you ever got to meet, says, hey, Chuck, would you give me a chance to work with you? I said, Stan, I'm pretty much gave up. I just can't get this. I got the block. It ain't fun. I've tried the Hank thing. I've taken lessons from everybody in the world. He's like, just give me a chance. And I said, I'm going to pass, but thank you. And finally, he was persistent. I said, you know what, Stan? Can't hurt. And Smiley is one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. I love that guy. And we got together. He says, first of all, he said, you're a puss, I think, deep down. I said, why you say I'm a puss, Stan? He said, you won't play golf. I said, what do you mean? He says, we can't hit balls all these hours without going to the golf course. Mm. He said, Charles, you're scared to play golf. You're a puss. He says, there's no water. There's no trees on this range. I said, what? He says, we're going to go play golf. And Smiley, I'm not going to lie. It was like I got great coaching like I had in the NBA from some great coaches. I've had some shit coaches, too. Let's get that out the way. But that was probably a turning point for me as a player. He says, we're going to go play golf. We're going to go to the back nine. We're going to play nine holes. There's going to be water on the left. There's going to be water on the right. There's going to be trees. And he says, I just want you to think about one thing. Don't worry about anything else. He says, just work what I'm trying. Like, I want you to swing the club, but think about one thing. Because I was mentally paralyzed. When I was standing over the ball, I was thinking about, I had like five coaches talking to me at the same time. Like, what did this coach say?
Charles, I've been there. Like, I get it. Like, I get it. I've seen, you know, 6 to 7, 8 golf coaches, and I've had the same thoughts over the golf on. And you're talking to somebody who was blessed with a lot of talent to play the game at a very, very high level.
You can't have all those voices. And that's what Stan said. He used to say, hey, screw all those other coaches. They're all good coaches. He said, I just want you to think about one thing. And, man, I started hitting. It took me a while, probably 6 months or 7 months. But now, anytime I play golf, I feel like I'm gonna have a decent round. Mm-hmm. But, man, Stan Utley. But he's the best at simplifying. He says, don't worry about trying to swing like this guy. First of all those guys out there, they tiny. You're a big old dude. He says, you can't get in the position Tiger, Rory, Justin Thomas. Those guys are this tall. Mm. You're never gonna be as flexible as them. You got a lot more leverage and anti-leverage. Like, you got a lot of more moving parts than those dudes. And he says, just think about the one thing we're working on. And, man, he's unbelievable.
That's awesome.
I mean, he's
man.
Unbelievable.
Nothing makes me more proud when you show up on the 17th hole at Tahoe and you're having a good day. Like, I think you hold out for the first time this year. What was that on the second hole at Tahoe? You spun it back into the hole. I mean, you've had some incredible moments over the last couple of years. You're actually starting to have highlights when you come to 17th hole, which is fun.
Well, let's don't put an S on that. It's highlights.
Highlights. No, we had two because you stuffed it on 16. You hit one in there close.
You know what? I feel really good. I played with the great Gary Player last week. He's been a great friend.
Why was that match out on Golf Channel? I would have watched you, Gary Player and Charles Barkley, mic'd up playing golf. That's what people need to see for the match.
I tell you what, he has become a friend the last two or three. His daughter lives in Philly, and what a great man. He's turning 90 like in the next week or so. He hit every fairway. I mean, it was amazing to watch. And he gave me a bunker lesson and a chipping lesson. And he's just a wonderful person. And, you know, he's excited. He's found new love in his life. They're both 90. I'm like, damn. he was so excited talking about this new woman. And like, unfortunately, his wife passed away way back. And he says, Charles, you're not going to believe this. I'm in love. I found a woman. He's like, I says, found a 90-year-old. He says, we play golf every day. We work out together. He says, the most incredible thing. So I'm happy for him.
Good for Gary.
Oh, my God. You know, and you know, it's so crazy. You know, he's such an amazing man, Smiley. Like, when we've been playing golf about 3 or 4 years, and he'll say something. I'm like, yo, man, stop right there. Don't just gloss over that. He's like, you know, I was spending time with Nelson Mandela. And, you know, what do you think of this next shot? I said, yo, man, I don't give a damn about that next shot. Can you just go back over here? You just sit there and said you were with Nelson Mandela, one of the greatest human beings ever. And then you want to ask me about this next golf shot. You don't have to tell me about Nelson Mandela because that was incredible. And he tells me these Nelson Mandela stories. And then he talks about Charlie Sifford, Lee Elder, heroes of mine who I got to know a little bit in my day. And he was telling me about he had to ask for permission to bring black people to South Africa back in the 70s and 80s when they had apartheid. And I'm like, man, I admire you so much. And he does so much with young kids today. And this dude just said I was with Nelson Mandela. And I was like, wow. This is incredible. And when he starts telling me stories about that, like, can we hurry up and finish golf so we can go talk about Nelson Mandela?
How did Gary play? Like, what did he shoot?
I think he shot, like, even par.
What? I know he's obviously incredible, but still, at 90 years old, shot even par? What tees is he playing?
He playing the white tees, but Smiley. What? 245 down the middle, 250 every time.
He's hitting 245.
He's probably 245. I'm not even joking. And then, you know, they make these woods so good now. He hitting the wood, and they land like butterfly with soft feet. So he's hitting – I mean, he does hit woods into these par fours.
But they're just
– I don't think he's playing the senior tees. I think he's playing the white tees. His grandson, Jordan, he kind of hooks us up. He plays, and I think he beat his grandson.
Gosh.
It was incredible. He hit every fairway. It was incredible.
Breaking your age is something that every golfer wants to do at some point in their lifetime, and he beat it by, 18 shots.
Yeah, I'm just trying to beat Mr. Players. I'm just trying to beat his age.
I love that. That is so good. Well, you kind of brought up Nelson Mandela, and it kind of made me think about what would your dream foursome be, Chuck, and where would y'all play?
You know, anytime I played with Tiger, it was incredible. Because when he was in his heyday, it was something to see. It was something beautiful to see. I would like to play with Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus is probably, you know, I think he's the second greatest golfer ever, but he's probably the most humble man, superstar I've ever met. I've had the pleasure of being around Mr. Nicholas 5 or 6 times. There's never been a more humble superstar. And it's always an honor and a privilege to be around him. Probably yeah. Bill Russell. Bill Russell was a great mentor and friend to me. He was incredible. He taught me a lot about my social awareness and social consciousness. And I probably have to pick one of these young whippersnappers today. I'd probably have to go with Scotty Scheffler. I like him a lot as a person. I think he got his head on straight. Because, you know, fame is a very dangerous thing, especially now. It's always been dangerous. It's always been dangerous being in the limelight, but it's gotten more dangerous with every talking head has a pain of you now.
And social media.
Social media is the devil. I just got into social media.
Oh, you did?
Because I got a vodka gin in Birmingham. You know, if you need a vodka gin, let me know. I got you.
It's a Redmond. Redmond?
Yeah, sorry. Redmond.
Yeah, there you go.
So you need a Redmond or vodka, let me know. I got you, brother.
I fly out every week in Birmingham, and there you are waving at me with your Redmond right there as you walk through.
If you need any, brother, let me know.
All right, thank you.
So I think, number one, bless these guys for how much money they make. That's my first and foremost. But, you know, I bless these guys, and they can make a lot of money. But, man, they have to keep their head on a swivel. That's a great question.
And by the way, this would be a 5-man wolf game because it's you, Tiger, Jack, Bill Russell, and Scotty. So y'all were playing wolf, it sounds like.
Well, you know, I did add a person.
Hey, it's fine with me. It's fine. Yeah. Dream fivesome.
Yeah,
yeah. Where are we teeing up?
Well, if Tiger and Mr. Nicholas cannot get us on Augusta, it's something wrong with Augusta.
So Augusta, that's a good answer.
Let me tell you something. It was incredible being there. Like I say, it was great. That was my second and third time playing there. But to have it like in Masters shape before the Masters, it was incredible. I mean, that was not a weed anywhere.
Dude, those slopes on those greens, people have no idea.
They got zero idea.
It's unbelievable when you stand on that 6th green and you think, wait, I got a 2-putt from the bottom of this hill to the top of that hill when that pin's on that back right at 6, or you name some other spots, or you're just thinking that it's unbelievable.
And they probably probably had the greens like half of what they were going to be for the Masters.
Right.
But it was a beautiful, it was honor. It was an honor to play there. But that would be it, to play there. It'd be incredible.
Have you been to the Masters, like as a spectator?
I have not.
If you will.
I avoid crowds. Because as I go back, I told you about going to the supermarket and dry cleaner. People think I'm there to talk to them. And I want to be able to see, but I would. That Birkin thing. Pay took us on a tour of that Birkin thing with nobody there. I would never leave that spot. I would go from bar or restaurant, how you want to phrase it. I go like every 2 hours in every bar.
Go check out the seafood tower over here. Yeah, you go get the caviar over here. You got the mimosa thing happening. They got the putting green over there. Yeah,
come on, Smiley. I'm black. We don't do caviar. Let's stop.
Okay. Well, neither do I. So I'm okay.
We don't do. There's no caviar in the hood. Let's let that go.
That's too good, man. Oh, gosh. You brought up Scotty Scheffler a minute ago, and this is kind of the best way to take us out on all this is the Ryder Cup's coming up. And Scotty Scheffler is undoubtedly the best player in the world. It's Rory McIlroy called it inevitable, what Scotty's been able to do. Does Scotty remind you of anybody, and whether it be basketball or football, that we can maybe compare to another sport? Because right now, it's the run he's gone on the last couple of years, Chuck, is it's Tiger-esque. If you want to compare it to Tiger, you can, but it's been great for the sport watching Scotty.
Well, I think as people like him, there are few guys in the history of golf. There's been Arnold Jack, and Gary. And then it goes to Tiger and Phil. Those are like five. There's a lot of great golfers now, but there's five guys who have stood out as far as you got to watch them on television. Mm. Like in the NBA, we had Magic and Bird, who the two most important people in NBA history. Then it goes right to Michael, which is Tiger. Then you probably got Kobe and LeBron and Steph. There are a lot of great players, but there's only a few guys who are like that guy.
Generational.
It's generational. And that's no disrespect. And Scotty is that guy now. And guys got to step up. You know, I was watching Novak Djokovic the other day, and remember, there was a time when he couldn't beat Federer and Nadal.
Right.
And he's like, I got to do something. He went on this physical journey, mental journey, and now he's probably in the GOAT conversation. He ended up beating both of them.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody going to have to step up to challenge Scotty.
It's hard to beat, man. It's like all of his data is unbelievable. Like just what he's able to do.
But VJ beat Tiger one time. I think Wei Yang beat him head to head. And like I say, even though he's Tiger, somebody gonna have to step up. And it can't, like, that's what makes sports beautiful. Mm. Like, I was so happy for Fleetwood. I don't even know him. But I know how painful it is to come that close. Because the pressure was only going to go ratchet up. The media was only going to ride him even harder. And so that goes back to what I was saying earlier. Man, being in the limelight, being famous or great at a sport, right now... Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, they're two of the best players in the world right now. But unfortunately,
they gotta
the
win.
Idiots in my business, they're like, well, they can't win the big one. Mm. Is it fair? It's not fair because it's a team game, but that's just the way the business is nowadays. Well, you guys are great, but until y'all win the Super Bowl, we're not going to give y'all the credit and respect y'all deserve. Is that fair? No, it's not fair, but that's just how it is.
Yeah, especially being a team game. And I think in the game of golf, every great player has their peaks, and how long their peaks last is how you determine what this person's career is judged off of. At the end of when you look at Jack and all these guys, how long did they play their best golf? And right now, Scottie Scheffler is doing what Tiger Woods was doing for an extended period of time, where you've had, you know, the Jason Days, the Jordan Spieths, have these JT having these really, really high level Tiger like years, but they haven't been able to put them back to back to back. And that's currently like what we're in right now with the Scottie Scheffler era, is that he's done this year after year after year, and it doesn't look like it's going to slow down. That's the thing that gets everybody excited now when you turn on the TV. It's like, oh boy, here comes Scottie. You know, that's what's good for TV. It's because you know that he is built for every single moment.
It is. It's great for TV, but that's the thing. Hey, we start over every year. That is the beauty of this thing.
That's right.
Like, he's got four majors, and he's got a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to watch, because it's harder to win in golf than it's ever been. That's no disrespect from anybody from the past. The foreign countries have gotten so much better. That's the reason the United States won 100 Ryder Cups in a row, because those other countries were not good enough. Now every year is a dogfight.
That's right.
because of Faudo, Seve, those Ian Woosman, Gary Player. These foreign countries now, man, they got so many good young players. Rory over in Ireland. Mm-hmm. So that's why the Ryder Cup is going to be like, because, I mean, we went like 100 years without losing. Because we had all the good players. Now because, number one, they got so many good foreign players, and the golf equipment is so good now, that's what even makes Scotty, what he's going through, even right. more impressive. Because, man, the competition is only going to get better every year and gets younger every year. We got the kid Corbin at Auburn.
Man, how good is he?
Man, I was watching some highlights of is it the Curtis Cup this week? Which one?
No, it was they played the Walker Cup at Cypress Point.
Yeah. And that goes back to my point about Pebble Beach, man. It shouldn't be damn cold and just like guys out there freezing their butt off. I was like, see, that's why I can't go to Pebble Beach. But, you know, Auburn, the defending national champs, I might add. I got to give my boy Coach Nick a little love and the Auburn Tigers. But, man, the players are so good and so young. You know, Tiger got these guys. Number one, Tiger did two things that changed the whole game. Number one, winning at a young age. Because when I used to play with all the older guys, they're like, we didn't think we could win until we were 30.
Right.
Yeah. He said, like, we never thought about winning at 21 and 22. And he said, then Tiger comes out there. Now every young kid comes out there. He's like, no, I can win now. And, you know, you talk to Curtis String and Strange and the guys back in the day and who I've got to know really well through the years. They're like, nobody thought a young kid could win before he was 30. Like,
it's cocky, man. It's disrespectful.
Yeah, it's going to take me a couple years to get adjusted to the pros. Gonna take me a couple years to get adjusted to the courses, and they're like, "Nah, I can win at 20." That's because of Tiger now, and now also he got them all working out. So it's such a different animal for these guys. So what Scott is doing is incredible, but man, I can't wait. But they do have to figure out this live thing though, because we can't have two separate tours. We can't have John Rahm, Brooks, Bryson, they're three of the best players in the world. They got to have a chance against Scotty all the time and not just in the majors. They've got to come to some type of resolution. It'll be good for the game. It would be good for the game.
It's been a mess. I tell you what, it's been a good time to be in the podcast, at least the golf podcast business, because there's plenty to talk about when it comes to live golf. And, you know, we've had people come on to try to educate us on just the government side, which when you talk to a lot of players, that's been a big holdup, is making it to where both of these sides can come together from a monopoly standpoint. All these things, Chuck, I don't know anything about that stuff, but I know that there's been some issues as far as trying to get the government involved to make it happen.
Yeah, you know, listen, we've always had separate leagues that came together. Mm-hmm. You know, NFL, AFL, NBA.
Just figure it out, right? Just figure it out.
ABA.
Figure it out.
We've had, what was that? We had the USFL.
Mm-hmm.
We've always had competing leagues, but at some point they're like, you know what, you got to figure it out. And listen, man, we have to always remember something. These leagues have made us all more money than we can ever dream of. We make in sports, you think, in all sports. All sports, we make more money than any faction in the world. Think about that. I tell people, I say, yo, man, people who play sports, we make more money than any group in the world. We are more fairly compensated than any single group in the world. Like, people who work for Ford, they might make a nice living. They ain't making millions of dollars. People who work at a hospital who are important, they ain't making a gazillion dollars. People in the Air Force, they ain't making millions of dollars. Teachers ain't making millions of dollars. I mean, the guys sitting on the NBA bench who don't play making $5 million. guys who play golf, they hunt. I mean, they down to 100 now. But the last few years, the guy ranked 125th on the money list, made $500,000 a year. So
more than that. More than that.
So they're making. Come on, man, shut the
million,
hell up and get,
a million,
get
a million
together.
Five.
Now, just get together, man, and figure out what's good for the game, because the game is the reason we make all this money, not because, like, yeah. Because think about this. And there's only in the NBA, we got 400 players. It's probably 50 are important.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as a slight. I don't mean that as a slight.
But you get it from a TV standpoint. Like, you know who you guys key in on every day, yes, on a rundown. It's like, hey, we're going to talk about this guy. But, yeah, like, you ain't talking about the fourth or – unless it's like a sixth guy who's just absolutely taking the team to the next level.
The number 10 guy on an NBA team, nobody knows who the hell he is. He's making $7 to $10 million. Come on, man. Like, number one, bless him. Bless him. But come on, man. You're making money because you play on a team with Steph Curry, Draymond, or you play with Shea Gildress, Chad Holmgren, and Jalen Williams.
Like, I love Naz Reid. Played at LSU, but that boy's, he was a sixth man in Minnesota for a while. I don't know if he started this last couple of years, but he makes a lot of money because he plays with Ant, you know?
Yes. And bless him.
And he's making millions and millions of dollars.
Yes.
Crazy, right? But I tell you what, one of the best events that we have in the game, and there's no money involved, and I think this is a lot of the conversation why people think Europe wins this event more often than not, and why they've outperformed the United States. And you brought it up earlier, the Ryder Cup. We're coming up on a couple weeks now at Bethpage in an extremely hostile environment. Typically professional players, Chuck, we have everybody cheering for everybody out there. You know, they cheer on good shots, but this week in particular, I think you're going to have a New York crowd trying to cheer on Captain Keegan Bradley and this United States team to win. And I don't know if you saw this, but Rory McIlroy had said that winning an away Ryder Cup may be one of the best accomplishments in the game of golf right now. What's your take on who you think potentially is going to edge out at this year's Ryder Cup?
I think what Rory said is one of the smartest and coolest and important things. Like, I 100% agree with him. It's easy to win when you got everybody cheering for you. I think I as a player, I love the hostile environment, because you got those 12 guys, you got the coaches, that's it. There was nothing better than sticking it to them. It was nothing better. I think it's going to be awesome.
Did you like playing away games more? Like, going into a hostile environment, like in a can't lose? Or did you like having home games?
I loved it. Okay. Now, first of all, let's get one. I prefer to have that game at home. Let's get that out the way.
Sure.
But your senses are so ready when you know it's just those guys in that locker room. You know, ain't nobody going to be cheering you. Yeah, I love that environment. When you went to Boston Garden, that was crazy. To Old Chicago Stadium, those were the two toughest places I've ever played. Because they were right on you. Mm-hmm. They didn't start building these massive stadiums until later. But when the crowd is right beside you, calling, talking about your mama and people in your family, and there's nothing you can do but take it. That was always awesome. But the Boston Garden and the Old Chicago Stadium, those are the two most hostile environments I've ever played in. So I used to love it. Oof. But I can't wait for the Ryder Cup. I think it's always exciting. I think representing your country, I told you, man, on the first Dream Team, when they put them gold medals around our neck, and, you know, I'm with Magic Bird, Michael Jordan, and Karl Malone, Patrick, and Irvin, all these guys, man, we didn't realize how emotional. It was like, we all had goosebumps. Actually, this flag here, I got everybody to sign this.
It's one of my I see the signatures now. I didn't see that originally.
It's one of my coolest possessions. I got an autographed jersey. I'm in my workout room I got a signed jersey from everybody on the wall in here.
Oh, wow.
But this is one of my most prized possessions. I got everybody to sign this.
That's so
man,
cool.
Ain't nothing better than representing your country. It's one of the coolest things ever, plain and simple.
Man, it's going to be amazing. Can't wait to watch this year's Ryder Cup. But I real quickly, talking about Europe showing up into New York, they're going to have an experienced team. 11 out of the 12 guys from the team that really took advantage of that United States team back in Rome are going to be running it back. When you showed up into a hostile away environment with a team that you've had experience with going into battle with, how much of an edge did you feel that gave you showing up feeling like all your guys can handle this moment versus a team that maybe was a misfit of characters that haven't had, you know, battle experience together? Do you think that makes a huge difference too heading into New York?
No, I don't think it makes a difference because the environment going to be so different. Everybody was like, oh, Rory, I love you so much. Ludwig, I love you so much. Like, they not going to be saying that in New York.
Nobody's singing songs.
So now, the only way to shut that down is to play well.
Right.
So is it knowing everybody a plus? Yes. But the environment going to be 100% different.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to look over there and see your cute little girlfriend with the bunny eyes or your little wife over there. No, that won't be those drunk fools in New York. Like, that won't be happening. So I understand. You're like, well, we got the same team. Yeah, you got the same team. But if you think this environment, everybody lovey-dovey with you over there in the island where everybody's telling you how great you are and these people up here, because you know New York is going to be ready.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be ready.
Listen, and the first thing I'm going to do, because they're probably going to have scoreboards.
Oh, yeah. You got the video boards, too, that you can kind of watch the coverage,
that's
too, when you're out there.
That's what I was getting ready to say. If I'm Keegan Bradley, I'm putting that Rory McIlroy sound bite up to start the matches. And I want the crowd. I want the crowd rowdy and ready to go. I'm playing. When he said, I remember him saying that, and I saw it somewhere recently. He's like, and we're going to go to Bell Page and do the same thing. Like, I'm playing that to start the Ryder Cup. Like, I'm going to call I'm going to call ESPN and say, I need y'all, when y'all come up here to interview us leading up there, I want y'all to play that soundbite. I'm calling NBC. Leading up to the match, I want y'all to play that as much as possible. I'm trying to make the environment as hostile, because that's what home court, that's what home ice, that's what all ice, field, course, that's what home advantage is. I'm trying to get the crowd on my side. I'm playing that Rory McIlroy soundbite everywhere, plain and simple. And that's fair. That is fair. I was watching something the other day. Oh, it was about the Baltimore Bullies, about their 30 for 30, the year they won the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And they put the coach... they put on the board before the game when he was talking about the coach said, yeah, we're the best team in the NFL. When Baltimore comes here next week, we're going to punch him in the mouth. He says, I'm not putting plays in there. I'm just putting this tape. I got it. But you use everything to your advantage. They put that up there. And when there's like the ball, I think they said it was the Tennessee Titans said, we're the best team in the NFL. And when Baltimore comes here, Eddie George's going to run wild on them. He says, I didn't have to tell my team anything. I just put what Eddie George and the Titans, I forget when they had moved. So he used everything. I'm putting that Rory McIlroy all over ESPN, all over NBC, but I'm definitely bringing it to the course, plain and simple.
Man, I think you're onto something, Chuck. I think you're onto something. I want to see this crowd absolutely insane. I'm excited for the Ryder Cup too. And what's your final prediction? U.S. or Europe? Who gets it done?
Oh, I think the home. And Because I think New York is a different animal. I truly believe that. I always tell people, New York, Philly, Boston, their fans are different. When we played the Knicks in a playoff series, and I hadn't seen it in person until last year. And when we were up there for the Indiana series, we only traveled for the conference finals.
Right.
New York is a different animal.
It kind of gave and you flashbacks,
and,
huh?
And you, it was so exciting to be there. It was so exciting to be there. And you factor in golf and drinking in New York,
mm-hmm.
man, it's going to be electric.
Makes my hands shake. It's going to be electric.
And I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
All right, so U.S., is that what we're going with?
We're going U.S., brother.
All right, because if you would have gone Europe, we might have to take the flag down above you.
Hey, I do agree with Rory. Winning on the road in a big game is better than winning at home. Any jock will tell you that. Not a regular game. But a big game to shit everybody up. There's nothing mm-hmm. like it. I'm not going to lie.
100%, man. I can't wait to watch it. And Chuck, I appreciate you, man. You took a lot of time out of your day today to talk to us here on the Smiley Show. So many great stories from golf, inside the NBA, and of course all this Ryder Cup talk. It really has been great, and we still haven't played together yet. And next time you're in Birmingham, please give me a shout. We need to head out to Shoal Creek's about to do a renovation project starting, but Vestavia Country Club, which you've been out to before, love to have you out, play some golf.
When you working again?
Let's see. I'm going to the Ryder Cup. A couple weeks to the Ryder Cup.
Are you home until then?
Yeah, I'll be home. Right. We're having a baby in October. So
yeah, I know. I saw the missus out in Tahoe.
That's right. That's right.
So when's the baby due?
October 1.
Okay. Charles Kaufman. That's it. Rolls off your tongue.
Yeah, we call him Chuck, little Chuck.
My granddaughter's name is Charlie, so.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Yeah, right, brother. You take care of yourself. Please give my best to the missus, and thank y'all Chuck. Be safe.
All right, War Eagle this time, all right?
War Eagle, brother. I appreciate it.
All right, bro. See you. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first lovely time. Fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too, so please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the